Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now Mark, let's start off with the volatility that we saw again this week. Most of that volatility on the back of political headlines regarding this on-again, off-again stimulus that could come from the White House, especially earlier on in this week when Trump said that negotiations and talks were off for that stimulus. The markets really took it on the chin. But very quickly, boy oh boy, did they ever bounce back. This is a trend that we are actually continuing to see in markets over the last about month and a little bit, is that any weakness does seem to get bought. Let's start off with this trend in the markets. What have you noticed when markets have seen some short-term weakness, some volatility on the back of headlines, and then the follow-through, which is a reversal higher?
Yeah, I think this has really been the pattern. I think that this is sort of just reinforces the idea that to look past the short-term volatility and the dips, and to use those dips not as reasons to panic, but really reasons to accumulate more. And I think that you see this throughout the markets. And I think that it's interesting about President Trump's tweet. But I think that the market sort of exaggerated. So why did the market come back so much? The answer that's in the sort of the media and everything is that that President Trump, after he said the negotiations were over, it's obvious that they're still having negotiations, and people feel optimistic that there could still be a fiscal deal this year, or this before the election. And I kind of think that the market just realized that it had exaggerated and took advantage of that dip to buy. And I think that there's a general agreement that regardless of what happens next month, that there's going to be fiscal stimulus forthcoming. The difference is what the Republicans want to spend it on, what size of package, and what the Democrats do. You know, I was looking at next year's forecasts for budgets and growth. And the U.S. is projected to have almost a 10% budget deficit next year. It's the biggest within the G7. It looks like the U.K. and Japan are next at about 7%. But look at what should be among the fastest growing economies in the G7 next year is Canada. And the budget deficit is supposed to fall from about 13.7% this year to about 5.3% next year. And I think that this really illustrates just the idea that how big the U.S. has gone into this, and it's not done yet.
So does that relate over to currencies then in terms of this continued weakness for the U.S. dollar? Even though every country does have some sort of stimulus package underway, you do have to balance them out. And if the U.S. is the largest, that should weigh on the currency.
Yeah, I think that's what we're really seeing. You know, for me, I'd say that September was a correction. Dollar bounce, maybe helped by some jawboning by the ECB. Dollar bounce, but that bounce ended. And now I think we're going to be working our way back up to the highs. We're having a very good day here before the weekend. Strong moves in the euro, in the Australian dollar, even in sterling, getting above 130 again, which I think is a neckline of a head and shoulders bottom that could project towards 133. But in general, I'd say that it's really like almost a binary. Is risk on? And if risk is on, what goes up? Stocks? Foreign currencies, especially like Aussie, Canada, the Mexican peso, and gold is also moving in line with the other assets, the other risk-on assets.
Why do you think gold's moving with the risk-on assets? Because usually gold is that risk-off asset, but it does seem like we're in an environment where, well, almost everything is moving up.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I can fully explain. So two levels of analysis, really, right? One is just to be able to describe, this is the correlation, and it's a very positive among the best of this year between gold and the S&P 500 right now. The other is a narrative trying to explain why that would be. And I think that ultimately it's that they're driven by the same factors right now. And that same factor is the idea that even with this fiscal stimulus and the backing up of U.S. rates a bit, they were still looking at very low interest rates for as far as the eye can see. Stocks like that and the gold bugs like that.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, and on top of low interest rates, it seems like money printing that will eventually come from both the Fed and the actual government. We're talking about U.S. equity markets here, though, because of the moves higher in just the last day and then even today. A couple gaps put in these markets. We don't know how they're going to close, but they do seem pretty strong right now. there's a trading strategy regarding gap theory when you do have actually 3 days of gaps. Mark, share with us that trading strategy and how it could be relevant right now.
Yeah, I think that's kind of funny. I feel like a bit of a boomer talking about gap theory, because I think that this generation who's grown up not having hand-drawn charts have really lost the insight of gaps, just like nature abhors vacuums. People think that the markets abhor gaps. And gaps are when, for example, on Thursday, the S&P 500 never traded within Wednesday's trading range. And the same thing here before the weekend, on Friday, the S&Ps never went back into Thursday's range. Two gap highs in a row, and if we have a strong close today, like it looks like we will, we get the third gap possible on Monday. And the trick partly is that U.S. is partly on holiday on Monday. But that gap higher opening, the rule of thumb is to sell the third higher gap opening on ideas that it can only happen. You can only get three gaps higher in a row if the market is really overextended. It just reflects how much people are chasing the market. So it's a sort of a contrarian indicator that the market's gone too far. And so I'd be watching that S&P and NASDAQ come Monday.
So tying that in with our last discussion of a lot of markets being correlated right now, does that mean we need to be aware that all markets might pull back if there is a gap put in on Monday from the U.S. equity markets?
Yeah, I think we're getting a very strong move here, and I think that in the currencies. And I think we might have to just back and fill a little bit. Maybe Monday is more of a consolidation day, correction Tuesday, but I would imagine by the middle of the week or so, we'll be back into this bull mode.
So, Mark, how do you balance out some of the leaders or drivers of this move higher? Today is a bit of an anomaly compared to the last few days where the NASDAQ is actually leading the S&P and the Dow. But more recently, we have seen a bit of a rotation. It's not been these high-flying tech stocks leading the markets. It actually has been small, mid-cap stocks, transport, some of the sectors that were lagging. The argument being this is a healthier recovery for these markets, but how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I hear you. And the stock market could use some like broadening out, but I think what's going on here and why people become more cautious on tech is that we know that the U.S. is working through thinking about how to manage, how should the government address these huge, what some people think are quasi-monopolies. And the House panel, so our lower chamber, had a subcommittee working on a report about what to do. And it's a pretty strong, it's like I think it's a 400-page report. Of course, I haven't read it fully. But the idea is that there's going to be a drive in the coming years, perhaps as early as next year, to begin curtailing the power of some of these large tech giants. So if they run a network, the idea is they shouldn't be able to sell their own products on that same network. And so you can see how that could affect companies like Apple and Amazon. And I think that this is really the challenge now, is how to make sense out of these large companies. And I think that the legislative action is just sort of giving people a bit of a pause, waiting for it to shake out. And I think that's what's leading to this rotation that you're seeing.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. There have been a lot of headlines recently about governments looking into more so these big tech companies. But again, we haven't seen any clarity. And these big tech companies, they are very powerful. So we don't know how that is all going to play out. Let's also quickly talk about China, because I have a discussion about China on the weekend show. The argument is that the recovery in China is doing better, and we are seeing people go back to work and travel around and get back out in their more or less daily lives. Obviously, that has changed still for them as well, but also the investment attitude towards China has improved. What updates can you give us balancing out what's happening in China compared to the U.S.?
Sure. So, you know, China was on the almost a holiday long week this week and good part of last week. They came back today, Friday, and the PBOC set the reference rate for the dollar much lower than people expected. That means a higher Chinese currency. In fact, the Chinese currency today rose by about 1.4%. It's the largest rise in about 4 years. And I think you're right that it's coming from two things. One is an appreciation for the macro fundamentals in China, and secondly, by Chinese officials acquiescing to it. those strong fundamentals include, so as I say, they come back from the Golden Week holiday, and even though the internal travel was down by about a third from a year ago, it was still seen as solid. So you've got and other data suggesting that the recovery is on track. You've got high interest rates. I mean, imagine this. The U.S. is yielding about 75 basis points in our 10-year note. China offers over 300 basis points. And in recent weeks, we've had another benchmark company, index company, Russell, FTSE Russell, who said they're going to be including Chinese bonds in their index starting next year. And we're seeing this through other benchmarks. So you've got a relatively strong economy, high yields, and you've got a government that's beginning to take measures, partly embedded in the phase one trade agreement with the U.S., to open up their markets more. And open up their markets not just for goods, but to capital. And so so make it easier for foreign institutional investors to buy mainland bonds, to be able to hedge the currency, to be able to repatriate the money. So important steps are being taken, integrating China much more in the world of capital. And this, I think, Chinese officials recognize that they have to get that they have to allow a little bit more strength in the RMB. And that's what we're getting. We're at about 667, 669 today. And I suspect we're on our way to about 660 before the end of the year. That's another 1.5%.
Do you think that there could be a more positive attitude towards China too, because of the fact that the markets are starting to price in a bit more of a blue wave? And if Biden gets in, he'll be a lot easier on China than Trump was?
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of think that the hostility towards China in the United among the U.S. political elite is very strong. And I think that Biden's criticism of Trump's policy towards China is not that it's too hard, but it's not effective. And you can see this, that China has, you can just see this in a number of ways, including still China far behind the imports that it promised from the United States this year. So I think that we're going to see this this sort of confrontation with China being a very bipartisan move in the United States, and I would expect it to continue.
Okay. Mark, let's look ahead to next week then. What are some of the key aspects that you're going to be watching for next week that might move markets, or at least we should be paying attention to?
Well, we've got a lot of August economic data and some September economic data, and so we really get mostly Q3 data. And I think everybody recognizes that after a body blow in Q2, the major economies all expanded smartly in Q3. So I think Q3 is really history, and what we really need to focus on is Q4. And for many investors, we will look at, we've got some survey data. That's how the new month's data begins coming out, survey data. And next week, we'll get the October reading from the Philadelphia and the New York State Fed's manufacturing surveys. And we get the ZEW survey from Germany for also the month of October. And I think the takeaway right now is that while the world economies look very strong in Q3, they did lose momentum. And that loss of momentum looks like it's going to spill over into Q4. And without that fiscal stimulus in the United States, I think you see many economists have been revising down their Q4 U.S. GDP forecasts. And that really speaks to the other point that you mentioned about the contrasting with China. China looks like it's getting more into full stride, while it looks like Europe, the U.S., even Japan may be slowing down at the end of Q3, early Q4.
So when we get some of this data from Q3, it sounds like you think it's just going to be flat out ignored, as well it should be, because that is behind us. And quite frankly, it's just such a, again, volatile moves when it comes quarter to quarter, month to month.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that for me, what happens is some of the economic data, it sort of just poses like a headline risk. Like people immediately react to it. Maybe it's the algos, but look past that and see those kind of opportunities as really chances to really exercise, put in your strategy, implement your strategy, take advantage of those kind of headline moves as the market quickly normalizes.
Okay. Well, Mark, we'll wrap it up there. I think it's an interesting market that we're seeing, but you are right to point out that there's a lot of correlated markets out there, and quite frankly, there's just a lot of money sloshing around the system that is more than willing to buy these dips, and that continues to be a good strategy. But we'll see if that continues. I think it will, but also, undoubtedly, we are going to continue to see volatility at least through the election. Mark, great chatting with you. I'll post a link to your website, Mark2Market. It's a great resource on a daily basis for everyone to stay up to date on economic data and key moves in different markets. Mark, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.